Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So a group of us have just fairly recently come back from the Thanksgiving retreat, having the opportunity to practice together with the lay community, and also I'll be leaving tomorrow. But just thinking in terms of the having been on retreat, and then it's moving into winter time, cool weather. Really, just the cycle of nature is settling. Winter time, everything is kind of going into abeyance, and things are quiet. I mean, it's very quiet here anyway, but it's the general feeling of the cycle of nature. The winter is usually a real quiet time. So to pay attention to these cycles so that allowing ourselves to settle, to quiet, it's really important to allow the mind to become more still. It's just this, the tendency is, as the mind starts to quiet a bit, and then we look for something to do. We look for something to think about. Look about something to distract ourselves with, and even if it's fairly innocent, but still it keeps the mind stirred up and not clear, so that as we move into this, say, the winter season, and to pay attention to how to let the mind become more and more quiet and still. And it's a great preparation for winter retreat, where we've got 3 months of stepping back from the various duties and hustle and bustle that sometimes happens. And so to take this period to really prepare the mind so that when it comes to winter retreat time, and things are settled down. the word samadhi has many connotations. Meditation, concentration, it has, in Thai, it has the when it's translated, so the firm establishing of the mind, which is a really, I think, a really good translation. Getting a firm, the mind firmly established, to get a firm foundation for the mind, and that, because that firmness is in mindfulness, in awareness, in attention, that has a continuity. It's also, see, the mind firmly established it's also firmly established in wholesome mental states. The kusala dhammas, kusala citta. And that, when we're able to sustain that continuity of wholesome mental states, the mind becomes very steady. It's just a natural, it's part of nature. That's a natural law or natural result. It's just like when it rains, and you get wet. If you're outside, then you get wet. And it's just it's a natural result. There's a continuity of wholesome mental states, then the mind becomes steady and firm. So learning how to lift up the mind to these wholesome qualities, generosity, loving kindness, compassion. It's not just sort of forcing the mind to be focused, concentrated, one-pointed, and then it's all going to become peaceful. The mind has to be. There has to be a feeling of well-being, of happiness, in order for it to settle. So to make that more and more conscious. And similar, of course, the opposite is when we let the mind just keep following its tracks and habits of aversion or irritation, of ill will, or getting caught up in some kind of sensual distraction, sensual gratification. Just trying to keep the mind excited somehow. Being able to try to latch on to a pleasurable object which will gratify. And it just keeps crumbling and falling apart. And it's an unwholesome way of directing attention. It's not that we don't feel pleasure or happiness in the mind, but it has to be grounded in Dhamma, has to be grounded in wholesome qualities. It has to be grounded in skillful attention, so that push and pull toward liking and disliking, wanting, not wanting, keeps the mind out of balance. And the not letting the mind drift into dullness. These are like the five hindrances. Those are unwholesome mental states that cloud awareness and restrict discernment. That being and seeing the tendency to, you know, to dullness or just the turgidity of the mind, torpor, or don't apply the mind, we just kind of drift in a kind of either torpor or let the mind sink with its energy. It's not a wholesome, skillful. It's not kusala. But lifting up the mind up with certain an energetic interest, applying it with some energy, that keeps the mind bright. I mean, because we can get obsessive and make it distracted. We can worry, we can be anxious, we can be fearful, and that's another hindrance. I mean, just that restlessness and worry, and so that again, it keeps the mind clouded. So that developing a sense of contentment with what we're experiencing, a sense of contentment with things around us, contentment with the just the reality of the world as it is, takes that edge off that restlessness and worry. And it's really essential to do that, because that contentment is a wholesome mental state, and the restlessness and worry, for all we justify it or, you know, feel compelled, unwholesome, unskillful. It's important to get a feeling for this quality of kusala and akusala. The wholesome, unwholesome, skillful, unskillful. Because it's not as if it's morally wrong to be sleepy or morally wrong to have restlessness, but it's a hindrance to the mind that has the possibility of clarity and peacefulness. So that it's not something to be fostered. We want to be putting attention on how to cultivate these qualities of clarity, of peace, of firmly establishing the mind, bringing the mind to a place of samadhi, and not just by an act of will or trying to force the mind into some sort of idea of concentration, but allowing it to naturally settle. Skeptical doubt, wavering, another hindrance, just recognizing that as an unwholesome mental state. Mind is being overwhelmed or being influenced in a negative way, and is hampering the ability of the mind to settle. As we, of course, in our formal meditation, but it's also our habits of mind on a day-to-day basis. In our day-to-day activities, what habit of mind does it go to? Does it go to renunciation and generosity, or does it go to gratification and seeking objects of desire? And does the mind go to loving kindness, compassion, or does it go to critically assessing everything and everybody around us, and including ourselves, because it has a very different effect on the mind. Learning how to look after the mind, look after the heart, so that it can be well established, it can be firmly established, and establishing a quality of clarity, and that, and also recognizing that this firmly established mind is firmly established because of, say, as I was saying, continuity of awareness, but a continuity of well-being. It comes up in the suttas over and over again when the Buddha starts talking about the development of the mind in a causal process. And it's various bases of well-being, tranquility, joy, happiness. And in many of the suttas, the Buddha stops and says, the happy mind is easily concentrated. And that's it's important to get a handle on that. That we attend to the things that make the mind at ease based on wholesome mental states, wholesome dhammas, on kusala dhammas. And one finds the mind settling so much easier. One's happy to be peaceful and clear. So during the Thanksgiving retreat, I had a memory come up of a description, say, of right concentration, samadhi, and being the unification of mind with cessation of suffering as its object. It's a really it's something to work with, because the ekagata citta with nibbana as its aramana. Unification of mind coming together with a cessation, an ending of suffering as its object. Because sometimes we unify the mind, but it gets unified on we get very focused on some sort of criticism or some opinion, but that's not helpful. It's not sort of right concentration, and it doesn't lead to an end of suffering. So that to be able to pick up that unification of mind with that cessation of suffering, the release and relinquishment of suffering as its object. It's an important way to just practice and train and experiment with it and see when I meditate and practice, or when I'm going about my day-to-day activities, what's my mind gathering around? What's its focus? What is it interested in? What does it unify around? So that to really question that and watch that, observe that, and keep encouraging it to come to a place of relinquishing suffering, allowing those qualities of well-being and peace to establish themselves. I think also as we experiment with the meditation, with that practice of settling the mind, it's important to realize, well, there's different ways that we direct attention when we, and has different results in that practice or training of the mind. And the Buddha points to, you know, it's like there's samadhi that leads to, say, happiness in this present moment, happiness in the here and now, and it's a pleasant abiding in the here and now, and that's the jhanas, or that's this, what it provides and what it leads to, it's a helpful way to see, okay, yes, and it's useful, it's beneficial, it's important to learn how to find a pleasant abiding in the here and now. That's where our habits are usually in the opposite direction, and also those speaking just of the four jhanas, and the grounding of it is in the entry is in the pulling back, withdrawing the mind from those five hindrances. It's like when we chant we've been chanting some of these in the new chanting book, and there's stock phrases from the suttas, descriptions that the Buddha gives of practices, and then in the part on the Eightfold Path of the pointing to the right concentration or samma samadhi, and that vivichehi kamehi vivicha akusalehi dhammehi, so secluded from sensuality, secluded from unwholesome states. Oh, that's that's pointing to these, that's seclusion from, withdrawn from, having dealt with, put down, put in abeyance the five hindrances. As one does that and allows the mind to unify around an object of attention, then the Buddha said there's a happiness there's a concentration because of the happiness born of seclusion. The mind unifies and settles because of that happiness that is born of seclusion, of stepping back, and that to allow the mind to steep itself in that, and other places the Buddha points to as the mind settles and as the mind becomes this happiness arises, well-being arises. And one takes that happiness and well-being and that idiom that he uses, that drenches and steeps, fills and pervades this very body with the happiness born of seclusion. So it's like that, taking that well-being, that happiness that we experience as we step back from the five hindrances, step back from the boring habits of mind that are so kind of dreary already, and then taking that and drenching and steeping, filling and pervading, permeating and pervading. You know, this language is really quite explicit. Allow our body, our being, to be grounded in that well-being, in that happiness. And it's a very different happiness than chasing after sense objects, and chasing after things that are sort of momentarily gratifying, and then we have to chase after something else again. And that's that opportunity that we give ourselves and to really settle the mind. But realize that it's also, you're using the body as a base to ground yourself in well-being and peace. And that's where the clarity arises. And then as we continue to do that, then the mind keeps settling and the mind keeps getting more refined. And it's not pushing, forcing, willing the mind to refine. It's just, it feels good to let things drop away and the mind becomes increasingly settled. To be, take an interest in that process, because it really, that's the nourishment for our practice. That's the nourishment for our training, and that's the nourishment for the clarity of mind that will really be able to see things in their true nature. That it's a pleasant abiding here and now. But it's a good foundation for our continued practice. And the Buddha also points to, say, concentration and samadhi that leads to knowledge and vision. And having some kind of knowledge, understanding, and some of it is knowledge of things that are say beyond our normal reckoning, but it's and then the Buddha points to that the perception of light is how we cultivate it, and these are possibilities of the mind, the perception of light, brightening the mind, brightening this ability of consciousness to experience things in a more broad and spacious way. The Buddha points to samadhi that is leading to mindfulness and clear comprehension, so that we settle the mind, focus the mind, unify the mind, but it leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension, which is a really essential quality in being able to who am I? What am I? What is the world around me? And then the Buddha points to how we direct attention in that way is with the directing to the arising of feeling, the vedana, the establishing of feeling, and the passing away of feeling, the arising of perceptions, the establishing of perception, the passing away of perception, the arising of thought, the establishing of thought and the passing away of thought. So that picking up that theme of our feeling, perception, thought processes, seeing how that arising there for a while, passing away, right, and that process. And as we, because that there, that mindfulness and clear comprehension is that it's on the moment to moment level of where our minds are, tend to be directed and being conditioned, and because we condition our thought processes through perception and feeling, and then, you know, our thoughts are going to then going to be sort of moving us in directions where there'll be other perceptions of feeling, so that being able to understand that with mindfulness and clear comprehension gives us a necessary foundation for clarity. Then the Buddha says there's concentration or samadhi for the say the ending of the asavas, the ending of the taints, and it's attention directed to the coming, the origination of the five khandhas, in the sense that this is body, this is its origination, this is how it passes away. These are feelings, perceptions, mental formation, this consciousness, this is its arising, this is its passing away, this is its origination, it's like this. And that's, of course, that's starting to understand the, you know, and picking apart loosening the grip of the ways that we create identity from, you know, our sense of self, sense of identity, sense of who we are, it grows out of just these. Aspects of being body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, and where there is this eye making, mind making, underlying tendency to conceit, in the sense of there's a me, and we compare to others, and but we're propping that up, we're building, we're making it. And it's only out of these, you know, it's out of these building blocks of experience. And just by seeing that process, then there's a releasing of those underlying tendencies, the asavas, the taints, things that flow out toward being and becoming. And so, you know, as long as we're doing that, we're off balance. Being able to back this cultivation of clarity and stillness within the mind. It isn't a stillness that nothing's moving, nothing is understood. It's stillness that we are able to respond to things from, so that we're not creating dukkha. Or they say like that stillness, the unification of mind with cessation of suffering as its object. So that pain, giving ourselves that opportunity to experience that cessation of suffering. And it's not some sort of goal off in some distant future, in some idealized version of me and the world some other time, some other place. this is something we can be doing right now. And it's a directing of attention and establishing that continuity of attention so that we're not just getting entangled in the various things that the mind is habituated to entangle itself with. It's in terms of practice and training and cultivation of our meditation, and it's learning how to direct attention, learning how to sustain attention, and learning how to experience the fruits of it, like giving oneself that opportunity. It's not just sort of waiting for it to happen magically somehow. It's lifting the mind up to wholesome objects of attention, lifting the mind up to ways of perceiving that actually satisfy the mind, brighten the mind, settle the mind. So those are a few thoughts for this evening. I'll leave it there. Sadhu Karandara Masay Sa